Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Today we have a bunch of stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about things that I don't know about, things that I've been coming across that I had no idea existed. Like, one, did you guys know that Saddam Hussein in the Gulf War wanted to implement some World War One type of trench warfare? Did you guys know that?
I didn't know that. No,
I had no idea either. And secondly, there's a dude that was in Japan. He was on the run or doing some type of combat operations for 29 years after World War II ended. They had to go get him. The dude was, when you hear this story, it's going to blow your damn mind. It's weird that there's stories like this. If there's a movie about this fella, I wouldn't watch it because it seems so stupid. We're going to do another little segment called How We Feeling About This, where we're going to tell you how we're feeling about this. And we'll probably get into some news that's going on, because right now, as we speak, I think there is a congressional meeting going on with Miley or whatever the fuck his name is. I will never know because I've said it wrong so many times.
Never once said his name correctly.
What is it, Miley or Millie?
It's Murray.
Is it Millie or Miley?
Millie.
Millie. All right. So then there's some other general that are up there talking, and they're actually giving honest answers. Like, we've been asking for accountability for a long time. It seems like they're throwing at the Department of State, which I totally agree with. The Department of State fucked it up. We'll probably have more on that next week because it's still going on, like I said. But we're going to have a lot of things to talk about today, and it's all going to be presented to you by our friends at the VFW. I'm pumped to have the VFW as our presenting partner. They're the nation's oldest and longest war veteran organization, and the VFW is committed to fostering camaraderie among the United States veterans of overseas conflicts. One of the ways that they're doing this, I saw the VA announced it this morning. Do you guys know how many applications have come in from the PACT Act so far?
100,000.
Million.
1.4 million people have signed up. And this year is the largest year that the VA has ever processed medical claims. They've done over 1 million claims just this year alone. And a lot of those have been helped by the VFW. Hopefully they haven't been done by loan sharks, because I read another story this morning that came from, I think it was Albuquerque. And there was a woman who, she was relying on those benefits that she was going to get from the PACT Act. And one of the companies, 40%. They took 40%. It's crazy.
I've seen on the Facebook pages I lurk in for military vets, the women ones, and they think some of these claim sharks are so good that veterans will go on these pages bragging, saying, does anyone else want to use this service? They're only taking 30%, 40%, 50% of my whatever. And people in the comments are like, that's not good. They should be taking 0%. Which is what the VFW takes. Nothing.
One other thing that I found out, they will be, because they don't care about what's going on because the loopholes in Congress are there, which is one of the main things that the VFW is advocating for. They're putting like law on these, like Veteran United law or veteran benefit law. They're putting law to make it look like it's a
really
lawyer.
Official, yeah.
And they're not even attorneys.
No.
Like, they're just saying that they're lawyers or that it's in line with the law, and that's how they can get law. The things that they're doing is absolutely despicable, and the VFW is here to start helping you, or not start helping you. They've been helping for a long time. They have 2,300 VA-accredited VFW representatives across America. They have 5,600 posts worldwide. I actually found out that there's a couple in America, Samoa.
No way.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Interesting. When I was at the VFW conference a few weeks ago, I met a couple dudes that one of the things that they were asking the VA to do is to expand care for people that are global veterans. Mm-hmm. And you don't really think about those people, right? Like the people that moved, like there was another dude that lived in Thailand and he was like, my military retirement, my VA benefits should not stop simply because I want to live somewhere overseas. And I was like, hell yeah, brother. You want to live in America, Samoa? You want to live in Thailand? You want to live wherever you want to? Your VA benefit should go there as well. And the VFW
Terre Haute?
Terre Haute, if you want to be in Terre Haute.
Saskatoon.
Saskatoon, or just anywhere in Saskatchewan, really.
Indeed.
Yeah, we're big Saskatchewan heads. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today. I'm happy about that, but we want you to connect with the VFW today by going to don'tfeedthesharks.org, or you could join by going to vfw.org/join today, or vfw.org/barstool. There's all kinds of ways, so if you don't sign up, fuck you.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. It's too easy.
It's just too easy.
Maybe haze yourself.
Do something to your face. Yeah.
I'm a lifelong member.
Same.
Mm-hmm. As am I.
I got it on my little hat.
Oh, you got the hat?
I got the hat.
Yeah, I got your little hat.
Oh, look at you with your little hat.
Little hat.
He's got a little hat. But that hat is how people know on the Hill. It really was kind of awesome seeing all those people walk in and that everybody is uniform, which, you know, I like, nobody had an umbrella. It was a great situation and everybody was helping out, and the VFW hats let us know that they were here to, and they weren't playing games. vfw.org/barstool. All right. There wasn't a whole lot that I wanted to talk about today, because there's sometimes in the military news where I'm like, this shit's fucking depressing.
Yep. Big story.
Really about, is.
Guess what? The barracks are still moldy.
Yeah.
There's still bad shit going on. Yeah, it was one of those weeks where it was a tough scrolling through. You're like, we've Groundhog's Day a little bit.
There's one that we won't talk about, but I came across this. I think it was from the Daily News or Daily Mail, something like that, from England. There's a dude, a general, major general in the British Royal Marines, I believe it was. And he got sent home from Afghanistan for doing a little champagne goofing with a bunch of the other folks, like the NGOs that were there.
Okay.
Sent his ass home. It was a front page article on their military section, like their global politics and military section, that a major general got sent home for champagne.
How is that? Nothing else to talk about, I guess. Yeah. I don't know, because I feel like other countries are a lot more liberal with alcohol in combat zones. Obviously, we did away with it. Do either of you know when we stopped and started really cracking down on alcohol in combat?
I would imagine the 80s, when not a whole lot was going on. That seems like we're not at war or anything anymore, so we're going to make harder rules when you go over there. But there's no British troops that are in Afghanistan. So this news came out. It was front page news. This story happened in 2017.
Oh, God. So everybody's hard up for military news. Yeah.
7 years later, you're going to write an article that this dude was having champagne? He had to wake up and be like, what the hell is going on?
This was 7 years ago.
So sometimes there's things that we don't know about, and this is one. Round number one comes to us from Iraq.
Yes, indeed it does. Now, let's hop in the time machine really quick.
Okay.
The year is 1990.
Yeah, it is.
We have the Macarena. Home Alone. You know me, I'm a Home Alone head.
Isn't Macarena a little rapey?
Hey, Macarena. No.
I think it is.
No, it's not.
I think it is. I think, Cons, pull up the lyrics while she's doing Macarena. This. Pull up the lyrics, because I don't have
The woman in that's very empowered. She's like, don't you worry about my boyfriend, the one whose name is Rino. I don't want him. Spanish. I can't stand him. And she's like, I'm going to hook up with you. I don't give a shit about my man.
I think I read a couple weeks ago that Macarena is very problematic.
Not the Macarena. Yeah. I can't stand this anymore.
Yeah.
All right. Hold on. I found the English version.
Okay.
Give your body joy, Macarena, that your body is to give you joy and good thing. Give your body joy, Macarena. Hey, Macarena.
Fuck yeah.
Give your body joy, Macarena, that your body is to give joy and good thing. Give your body joy, Macarena. Hey, Macarena.
All right. Well, I was wrong.
What a killjoy. We can all go.
All right. Macarena is still
anyway,
good.
Anyway, Tickle Me Elmo. Tamagotchis.
That's bad. That has a little bit of a rape vibe too, right?
That's not the laugh he had.
No, it's not.
Tamagotchis, I'll never forget. I had a tight girl squad in my neighborhood growing up until somebody tossed somebody else's Tamagotchi in the pool that summer. And the friend group was split forever. Anyways, speaking of nefarious, horrible things from the 1990s, also, Saddam Hussein, who was getting real squirrely. 1990, Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein invaded neighboring Kuwait. He claimed that the tiny oil-rich country was a historical province of Iraq. Honey, it's giving Russia taking Crimea vibes.
Yeah,
am I right?
Be original, Putin, be original, for one time.
Putin, come on. It's been done.
You fucking loser.
He also believed the Kuwaitis were stealing Iraqi oil through slant drilling, which I love the idea of sticking a straw underneath another country and take what if Mexico and Canada yeah. have their straws underneath our little butts?
Yeah, it's like the Lincoln Tunnel, but for oil.
Yeah, yeah. And they're coming through. So he thought they were stealing oil, or so he said, and driving the price down to hurt Iraq's economy. He also thought the U.S. won't do shit about it. They don't care. He was wrong. Iraq invaded Kuwait in August of 1990 and toppled the unprepared country in 12 hours. President George W. Bush then ordered Operation Desert Shield in response to the invasion. Oh, pardon me. HW. Yes, that's correct. The U.S. military began building up its forces in the area in case Iraq wouldn't leave Kuwait. They said, we'll just surround a little bit. They'll see us and say, you know what? We probably shouldn't do this.
Mm-hmm.
Saddam didn't care. He said, I don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. By November, the U.N. gave them a deadline. They're like, Iraq, if you're not out by January 15th, then you really need to get out. Mm-hmm. You got to get. That didn't work either. Saddam wasn't just going to sit there and wait to get his butt kicked. He moves an additional 100 to 300,000 troops into Kuwait to greet the Americans and their coalition partners.
I like how it's greet, like they're going to bring out all kinds of falafel.
Yeah, it was door greeters, actually. They put up a bunch of Walmart doors and then set all the troops behind it to greet everyone who came in. January 15th, the deadline passed, and the mother of all battles, the original Moab, was on. 1991, Operation Desert Shield turns into Operation Desert Storm. The U.S.-led coalition waged a Noah's Ark-like air campaign for 40 days and 40 nights. That's we were dropping aardvarks and platypuses and all kinds of shit on
two at a time.
Mental warfare there. Mm-hmm. On February 23rd, coalition forces made their way toward Kuwait. And that's when they found out the Iraqis had quite literally dug in. This is where he goes World War I on everybody's asses with the Saddam line. It was Iraq's first line of defense, a series of trenches, some filled with oil to be ignited, sand berms, trench works, anti-tank ditches, barbed wire, minefields. It was all that was keeping the coalition allies out of Kuwait. The attack to liberate Kuwait began at 4 a.m. local time, and the Saddam line of trenches was the first stop. How on earth could we possibly get past this World War I line of defenses? It's
especially
only
1990. In the sand.
Yeah, especially in the sand. The secret to success, we didn't have to go World War I. We didn't have to meet them down at their level. We didn't need bayonets. We didn't need trench brooms or chemical warfare, at least not from our side. The U.S. 1st Infantry Division mechanized instead plows, my friends, minesweeping plows. They just put plows on the front of their tanks called combat earth movers, and they did a bulldozer assault.
I love this move. Yeah. There is no chance in the world a general officer came up with that idea. Yeah. Zero chance. That is a specialist, a lance corporal, a senior airman, somebody that has E and less than five came up with that idea, and some general level officer heard it. They overheard it.
You didn't think that was all Schwarzkopf? That was
no,
or Colin Powell.
That was, no, absolutely
that was
not.
No, that was the
I respect
PFC
both of those
Doug.
Guys. I respect both of those guys and what they did. There is no chance that's a general officer thing that came up. None.
Just picture too. You're driving your mechanized combat bulldozer. You got a cigarette dangling out of your mouth. It's 1990. Lenny Kravitz like, how are you gonna go my way? Like, this way, bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fucking sick. So rather than clear the trenches man by man, the Americans simply plowed through the Iraqis on combat earth movers. And I'll say this is grim. Even burying some defenders alive as they tried in vain to shoot the bulldozers. For all I know, we could have killed thousands, said Colonel Anthony Moreno, commander of the brigade that led the assault. I came through right after the lead company. What you saw was a bunch of buried trenches with people's arms and thighs sticking out of them. And
see, I think that's a story that most people would know.
I
had no idea about it, but I will say this.
Yeah.
If you, as a human being, think you are going to stop a tank and you're not in another tank, I think you kind of get what's coming to you. You have to just kind of deal with that.
Sure. Yeah. Like if you're the enemy and you're like, I'm going to stop it. Like you're Austin Powers and that little cart is going to come and it's still a long ways away. I feel like you got to get out of there. But I think this is the exact right move in this situation.
What else? You're not going to put your troops in danger, in any more danger than you need to. The Americans suffered zero casualties in the assault, as they were all inside of armored vehicles and the Iraqi ground forces had no answer to them. As the Iraqis watched their comrades buried alive, they began to surrender en masse. Some 70 miles, imagine being put on the working party for that as an Iraqi soldier. Hey there, devil dog. Somebody better ship me 70 miles of trenches right now.
Hey there, fucking kitchen gloves. You better get your ass in that earth mover, which is a great
70 miles of trenches in your cargo pocket. Matter of hours, all 70 miles of the trenches were plowed over. 2,000 to 8,000 defenders surrendered, and it's not known how many were originally buried in the onslaught. I know burying people like that sounds pretty nasty, the colonel said, but it would be even nastier if we had to put our troops in the trenches and clean them out with bayonets.
Absolutely right. He's not wrong. Like, because when I heard it, I was like, God damn, that's that's brutal. If 2,000 to 8,000, you got 70 miles. I mean, how much do you think that they were every 15 feet at least?
Yeah, that's a lot.
I mean, you got to be dug. If you're going to have trenches that are good, like you have to have them all over the place.
Indeed, mm-hmm. You do. I had no idea about that. I did read about, because he said some of the trenches were just filled with oil to burn. And obviously we know now, speaking of the VFW helping people with claims and all that stuff, I was watching a documentary at an art museum, had a whole exhibit on Desert Storm and Desert Shield about how much shit got set on fire once Iraq knew that we were going to win that situation. They were like, if we can't have it, nobody can. And they just set everything for miles of black smog, just endless burning fields everywhere, like crazy.
I think the best representation of that in movies is in Jarhead.
Yeah.
Because they played that football game and then they go out to war and then they set it on fire. And there was so much oil in the sky that it started raining oil, like in different places. There was so much moisture, and whenever it would come down, it was like a black rain that happened.
It's crazy.
And you could look over those pictures. I think of all war pictures that stick with me from a childhood, Shock and Awe those first time that you see, that might be the first war where you had very common night vision.
Yeah.
Right. Like that. I don't know how much it was around in Vietnam or even if it was, but it wasn't as prevalent for sure as it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
So when you saw the reporter standing on the building in Baghdad, which those reporters that do that braver than the U.S. Marines.
Yeah.
Like putting yourself in those situation, but watching that explode and then watching the different oil rigs that were on fire was wild.
Well, too, that was before 24-hour news cycle. And so like the whole, you're waiting all day, you're at work, you're at school, whatever, and the whole family would like gather around to watch the news at night, and Peter Jennings like, watch this shit blow up.
What goes through your mind like in that situation? Do you think like this is it? Because once you're in that trench, you got nowhere to go.
That's what I'm saying. And a tank is coming at you. What are you doing? What are you hoping it throws a track?
I mean, I guess you're like those 2,000 to 8,000 that surrendered. I mean, running away in that situation, you can't do it. You got to be sitting there. If you know you're going to die and be like, well, this is good initiative, bad judgment.
Yeah.
Like we shouldn't have done this. And it wasn't like they didn't have a heads up that we had a bunch of tanks. Like we were coming through. That's it was a staging area for months.
I feel like.
And also we told them how many times, like, hey, you better not do this or we're coming. Come get you.
Yeah.
We're coming.
That's what I think the guys digging it and whatnot had to be like, fuck, dude. They have airplanes, man. I don't know.
And what did they dig it with? Did they have caterpillars?
That's a good question.
That's a great.
Just a lot of e-tools.
Bulldozers?
If it's 70 miles.
Yeah, they had to have had large machinery.
You know what sucked too? Because me personally, you give me a section of trench to dig, I'll do it. Worker bee, I'll get the job done.
Not right now.
If I have a little, that's true. Workers' compensation bee is more like it. If I have the extra 20, 30, 40 minutes, any in my spare time, I'm customizing my section of trench.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a couple shelves in there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have a hidey hole where I put all my snacks, my pogey bait. I'm going to have, I'm going to make pogey a couple, bait. Couple recliners out of sand.
The most military term that you've just brought out the top of your dome in a long time. Kate.
Yeah.
Pogey bait.
My lickies and my suckies and my. All that good stuff. I'm going to customize my trench zone. I'm going to say, I'm going to make this section of trench fun for all the fellas to come hang out. Not in a sexual way.
Right.
Have you guys actually ever seen the Chris Farley? Yep. Sometimes you say things, Kate, and I try to keep going.
Yep. Keep going. Keep going like a combat bulldozer.
I like to stop right there and have and a repeat. What did you say?
Yep. Started sweating immediately.
Yep.
Yeah.
But if when you build a cool sandcastle and somebody stomps it, that's how I would feel. Yeah. These guys, this is what I was getting at.
What do you think the field day inspections were like in the trench?
Dusty.
Yeah. Very dusty.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, you ever seen the Chris Farley where he is on the Weekend Update doing Norman Schwarzkopf talking about?
No.
Oh,
it's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah. No. If anybody's listening, stop and go Google Chris Farley Schwarzkopf. It's a very, very funny skit.
Noted. I will.
But I guess overall, what I wanted to say about this story, I don't know shit about the Gulf War.
Honestly, me neither.
Well, who really does? It was 96 hours.
But yeah, also I mean, not really, because they were in Kuwait forever. They were doing staging for a long time, which sucks. Like all that training that they had to do. But you're right. Like there's not a whole lot of meat on the bone there. But this story is some meat on the bone.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. I had no idea. I honest to God, I had no idea about that.
Well, I think because like what I just said, most people just think like, oh, that was over really quickly. And there was a lot more to it than just being over very quickly.
Yeah, kind of like Google. Sex. Yeah.
I'm going to Google those trenches afterwards and see if anybody felt.
Real quick. What doesn't get over real quick is our friends over at WWE. They kicked off their new game this week. And I'm not much of a gamer, but these are the kinds of games that I love.
Yes.
Like when you go in there, you could be really good at it, because I've watched people play it. Like some of the guys in the office have played it and they're really good already. Like
I played it on the Yak and I did good. Like,
Yes, I did. Were you just pushing buttons or did you?
Well, here's the thing I love. So this WWE 2K24 Finish Your Story is the theme there, but you can customize it. So I had a character, like my wrestler looked exactly like me. You can take pictures of your face and like impose them on the wrestlers and shit.
Oh, wow.
So say, you know what? It made me love, because you can do the mega match where everybody's coming out. So picture, this is what I was picturing because I am a boy mom now, hashtag boy mom. Sleepover party with your buddies.
Oh, yeah.
You customize a bunch of these characters. I'm bringing in the Totino pizza rolls, no free ads.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, but I had, because what you can do, you can go backstage. There's a match where you have to shove the other guy in a casket.
Yep.
A match where you have to shove them in an ambulance. I was against KB backstage and he kept trying to catch me. I'm like climbing ladders. I was going in the elevator. Like anything you see on the screen, if you interact with it, it does something cool. Like a fan will start by. It was just like, for me, who's not a gamer, I fucking loved it. And the guys who are gamers and into WWE also loved it. So sorry, yeah. I'm rambling, but
no.
Really,
you can do
fun.
All kinds of stuff. Like you do a backstage brawl, like you said, the casket match, ladder matches. They have all kinds of stuff. Like
there's a bunch of stuff hidden under the ring too.
That you can pull out. I love that.
Yeah, there's all kinds of weapons under the ring.
You know what the best thing to ever come out from underneath the ring was?
Oh no.
What?
When Jake the Snake Roberts would come out with his big old boa constrictor.
Yeah.
And it would be underneath in like this burlap sack. And he would pull it out Virgil or somebody, like he had just knocked him out, or even Hulk Hogan, be in the corner and Jake the Snake would come out and he'd empty out that bag.
Real snake?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God.
He'd put it on people. They would act like they're all scared, which I think that's the worst thing.
I would have been scared.
Like there's all kinds of stuff that is like torture that I would much rather have than a snake on me. It would just terrify me in every single way. But do you know if they have that?
I'll have to check, but they pretty much have. They have every character too. This one has every character like ever throughout WWE history, like
Superfly Jimmy old, Snuka.
I'm sure, go through it. They have like old, new, everybody was in there. Picture people in the barracks if you're looking for something to do on a Friday. Like this game, just fun for everybody, genuinely. Yep.
So if you want to experience a gripping retelling of WrestleMania's greatest moments and 2K Showcase of the Immortals, where you can relive a collection of the most unforgettable career-defining matches, all you need to do is download the WWE 2K24 today. Again, that's WWE 2K24. You can finish your story. All right, let's move on to round number two, which is going to come to us from Japan.
Okay, let me put you guys on.
No, it's fine. Keep going.
That's okay. It's my laptop.
Oh, I thought it was the chair. No.
Nope. It's my laptop.
Luckily, you can bend over easily and pick it up.
That's fine. I'll get it tomorrow. Let's go back in the time machine to 1944. The Macarena, the Tamagotchi,
exactly,
Home Alone,
right,
all those things.
Yeah.
But also something nefarious. the Japanese army. They were getting squirrely. Japanese army, 1944, they send 23-year-old soldier named Hiro Onoda to the Philippines to join the Tsuji Brigade. He was stationed on the small island of Lubang, approximately 75 miles outside Manila in the Philippines, and basically it was going to be all-out guerrilla warfare on this island to keep it away from the U.S. and the Allies. As Onoda was departing to begin his mission, his division commander told him, "You are absolutely forbidden to die by your own hand. It may take 3 years, it may take five, but whatever happens will come back for you. Until then, so long as you have one soldier, you continue to lead him. You may have to live on coconuts. If that's the case, live on coconuts. Under no circumstances are you to give up your life voluntarily."
Which kind of goes against some of the stuff that the Japanese army at the time was known for. Like they were known for, they're not going to get taken alive.
Right. Yeah, the kamikazes.
Yeah. And not just like in pilots, but in regular warfare as well. Like there happened on Iwo a bunch.
Yeah. He was basically Steve Austin-ing them. He's saying, never give up.
Is that a Steve Austin thing?
Is it?
Never give up?
I don't know.
It's probably more John Cena vibe.
Some kid on my bus had a shirt.
Okay.
Anyway, it turns out that Onoda was exceptionally good at following orders. And he looked at message to Garcia. He was like, okay, bitch. Not impressed.
He probably hated his wife, too.
He probably hated his wife. His kids were really driving him. Absolutely.
Yeah. Kids are brats.
Yeah, I'm not coming back till they're way out of diapers.
Yeah, they were driving him crazy. His old lady kept asking him to take out the trash. She's like, I'm fucking sick of this. Anyway, it would be 29 years before he finally laid down his arms and surrendered. This story is fascinating.
Yeah, it really is.
Just a couple months after Onoda arrived on Lubang, the Allied forces attacked the island and quickly overtook its defenses. As the Allies moved inland, Onoda and the other guerrilla soldiers split into groups and retreated into the dense jungle. Onoda's group consisted of himself and three other men. They're rationing their supplies, they're eating coconuts, green bananas from the jungle, and occasionally killing one of the locals' cows for meat.
Green banana is important because those bad boys will give you some vicious diarrhea.
Absolutely.
Well, so will coconuts, too, I'm pretty sure, if you eat too many of them.
No, I think bananas are actually anti-diarrheal, and coconuts are the poopers.
Oh, maybe. Mm. But what about their eyes?
Keep them out of your eyes, that's for damn sure. So it was upon killing one of these cows that the soldiers found a note some months later. It was a leaflet left behind by a local resident, and it said, "The war ended on August 15th. Come down from the mountains." And the Japanese guerrilla soldiers were like, "Sure, Jan. Okay, nice joke. Okay." They thought it was a clever hoax constructed by the Allies. And anytime there was flyers being dropped, newspapers being left, like the locals were desperately trying to tell the guerrillas in the woods, like, the jig is up. You're good now.
Done, bro.
Yeah, and they kept thinking, they're like, no, the commander told us, no matter what, he'll come get us, and if he doesn't come get us, the war must still be going.
Cons, how long you wait until you come out?
Wow, that's a great question. Not this long. I have to imagine maybe a year, tops.
No, I got 2 weeks in me. 2 weeks. Yeah. After 2 weeks, I am hungry. I got to go somewhere. I'd rather go back into town and be like, hey, what's going on,
well,
fellas?
Well, you like your wife.
I do.
Right. So yeah. This guy, though, put yourself in his shoes.
If he's this loyal, he didn't cheat.
Nag.
He didn't cheat.
She's a real pain in the tuchus. Anyway, so.
I'm in the middle of maybe the worst foot itch of my entire life.
Oh, get it.
Oh, got go off. It. Yeah. This is good podcasting
here. If you can't, our feet are all out. Oh, dirty socks on me. Look at that.
No, you're doing great.
Okay.
All right. So I'll move.
You guys both shoeless?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You don't know how we roll in the Chicago office.
Chicago's office, real chill, real laid back.
Very chill.
Not even allowed to have shoes.
Anyway, Onoda and his three dudes, they're in the jungle for years, occasionally engaging in skirmishes and acts of sabotage. If you're a local, you have to be like, God fucking damn it.
Who are they doing these things against?
Onoda fucking blocked the road again yesterday. We can't get to school. We can't get the kids to school. Fucking Onoda.
This is like having meth addicts in your neighborhood. Exactly. But it's in the 1950s.
Squirrely little gorillas who for decades think the war's still. Yeah, that's insane. Any villagers they sighted were seen as spies and attacked by the four men. And over the years, a number of people were wounded or killed by the rogue soldiers. In September of 1949, over 4 years after the four men went into hiding, one of his fellow soldiers was like, all right, I don't know, 4 years, guys, I don't know. And he silently dipped out into the night. Private Akatsu snuck away one day and the Tsuji Brigade was reduced to three.
See, you gotta, if that's that guy, he found out that it's fake. Like, yeah, he, come back that and it's get your over. Pals. Like, if he, that guy's a real piece of shit.
Yeah. Well, like, what a blue falcon.
Right. No, you think so. He tries to tell them, okay? He gets out of there. It was like the Truman Show. He took a little canoe and bonk, hit this wall and was like, wait a minute. And everybody's like, yeah, the war's over. He was greeted by friendly troops and he lets the know. He leaves a note for the guys in the woods, the other three guys. And it's like, I was greeted by friendly troops. The war is over, dudes. And the remaining men were like,
long over at that point.
The remaining men were like, oh, they got to Akatsu. They're using them to trick us. Okay. 3 years later, in 1953, Corporal Shimada was shot in the leg during a shootout with some fishermen who had fucking enough. And Anada and Kazuka helped him back into the jungle.
We're at 9 years right now.
Yes. And without any medical supplies, they nursed him to health over several months. Despite his recovery, he became a little gloomy. Okay. Yeah.
Imagine that.
He's out there advocating for his own version of the Pact Act.
Yeah.
He's like, this is bullshit. I need all kinds of VA help.
Yeah. So about a year later, the men encountered a search party on the beach in Ganten, and Shimada was fatally wounded in the ensuing skirmish. He was 40 years old. So imagine you get shot, you survive, despite no medicine, no painkillers. Yeah. And then you still end up dying because you guys can't stop goofing around in the woods. For 19 years, Anada and Kazuka continued their guerrilla activities, living in the dense jungle in makeshift shelters. Every now and then, they would kill another cow for meat, and which, once again, the villagers would be like, I cannot believe they are still fucking doing this. 19 years after Shimada was killed, on October of 1972, Anoda and Kazuka had snuck out of the jungle to burn some rice, which had been collected by farmers to sabotage the enemy's food supply. A Filipino police patrol spotted the men, fired two shots. 51-year-old Kazuka was killed, ending his 27 years of hiding. Anoda escaped back into the jungle alone, now alone. He has to think he is the biggest hardo of all. He's like, I'm going to get so many medals for this.
He's freaking John Rambo.
Yeah, he thinks he's like the Japanese Audie Murphy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically, news of Kazuka's death traveled quickly to Japan. It was concluded that since Kazuka had survived all those years, then it was likely that Lieutenant Anoda was still alive, though he had been declared legally dead 13 years earlier. More search parties were sent to find him. However, he successfully evaded them every time.
I mean, credit to
this guy. Fucking guy.
Yeah, he's waiting for his one commanding officer to come back. That's my it. Yeah. He needs that guy. And he knows after 29 years, still alive. Like, my boss is still alive. He's coming to get me.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Finally, so at this point, 1974, Anoda had been alone in the jungle for a year and a half. And this was huge lore back in Japan at this point now. A Japanese college student named Norio Suzuki tracked him down. When Suzuki had left Japan, he told his friends he was, in his words, going to look for Lieutenant Anoda, a panda, and the abominable snowman in that order. Sure. Basically saying this is going to be impossible. But he found him.
Be honest, if you're looking for the snowman, the Philippines ain't the place to go.
No, you're right. That's a great point. There's walk-in freezers, I'm sure. There's a couple areas.
True.
But he found Anoda in the woods, and he and Suzuki became really good friends. Suzuki tried to convince him that the war had ended long ago, but Anoda explained that he would not surrender unless that commanding officer who initially told him, never give up, came and ordered him to do so. Suzuki took photos of the two of them together, convinced Anoda to meet him again 2 weeks later in a prearranged location. When Anoda went to the meeting place 2 weeks later, there was a note waiting from Suzuki. Suzuki had returned to the island with one of Anoda's one-time superior officer. When Anoda returned to meet with Suzuki and his old commander, he was wearing what was left of his dress uniform, his sword, and carrying his still-working rifle with 500 rounds of ammo, several hand grenades. Yeah. The major, who had long since retired from the military and become a bookseller, said, boy, do I feel silly. I forgot to. Yeah. Oh, my. Well, boy, is this a little awkward. I totally forgot to tell you guys.
Can you imagine how many times Kate would tell this guy sorry?
Oh my God.
It would be a never ending stream of sorry.
You know what? If I was a NOTA, I'd be like, I'm sorry. I messed up. I guess I'm sorry. I stayed so long. My bad. That's embarrassing.
He kept his sword.
He had everything.
I'm getting rid of my dress uniform at that time. I don't need it.
Yeah. He kept his dress uniform, all of it. There were still the pleats in it. And this guy had to tell him, the major had to tell him, yeah, we lost the war like about 30 years ago. Oh, boy. After a moment of quiet anger, just a moment, Onoda pulled back the bolt on his rifle and unloaded the bullets, took off his pack, laid his rifle across it, and then began to weep openly. Buddy, I bet. No shame in that.
What a pussy.
Yeah, pussy. You could only do, I would have done 30 more years in the woods.
Right.
Yeah.
Discipline.
Absolutely crazy. By the time he formally surrendered to Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos, 1974, Onoda had spent nearly 29 of his 52 years hiding in the jungle, fighting a war that had ended decades before. They had killed people, some 30 people unnecessarily, and wounded about 100 others.
But to be fair, if you're hiding in the jungle for 29 years, killing one person a year ain't that bad.
That's true.
I guess guerrilla warfare. So he was kind of bad at it, honestly. Probably could have done a lot worse.
Those are rookie numbers. You got to get those things up.
But the Philippines were like, this whole story's so fucked up, we're not even mad at you. You're okay. We're granting you. Please get the fuck out of these woods. Man.
I mean, good on the Philippines, right?
This is fun. This is the fun part. He did receive back pay for his 29 years, but it amounted to very little. Okay, that sucks. He recorded his story as a memoir entitled No Surrender, My 30-Year War.
Added that to my reading list.
Uh-huh. Then moved to Brazil for a calm life of raising cattle on a ranch in May of 96.
No.
You didn't have to kill any of the cattle.
Well, we can't say that. He might have been a bee farmer.
Could have been. In May of 96, Hiro Onoda returned to Lubang and donated $10,000 to the school there. He then married a Japanese woman, and the two of them moved back to Japan to run a nature camp for kids, where he would share what he learned about survival on the island. And he's still alive in Japan today. Holy shit. 29 years.
We got to get him on the pod.
Come on the pod.
Yeah, seriously.
God damn.
Have Woody Williams and this guy.
Wow.
Jeez. I'm not gonna quit
my post until properly relieved.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I don't know. That is one of the craziest stories.
And look,
think about this. What would you do? Because back then, obviously, things were different. How would you have convinced him, hey, dude, no, seriously, this isn't propaganda. The war is really over. How would you go about doing that?
I think you got to kidnap him. Right. Like any of those folks, I think you got to kidnap them.
And do like when Austin Powers got unfrozen and they had to show him a video of like, here's what's been going on since you left. Like, here's reality.
Like,
I think you just got to show him enough that he realizes, all right, this would be out of the realm of possibility that they made this much up.
And I mean, think about what the jungle looked like in the Philippines. Like I haven't been to Vietnam, but I have been to Okinawa, which is essentially the same kind of climate. When you're in the jungle, it's not like you had DEET or off or skin so soft.
I wonder if he just got used to it, though. Like his skin adapted over time.
Like leathery?
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe so. Yeah, that's a good point.
Stop eating them.
After the show, I'm going to Google what he looked like. I'm Googling the trenches. I got a lot to Google, folks. I did not know. I did not know this stuff.
I didn't know either.
I'd like kind of heard of this story, but I didn't know it in that detail at all.
I definitely didn't know 29 years. Like, no. I've heard people living for a while, like in the jungle and being away for a bit. I mean, you hear those stories about World War II folks that didn't want to be captured, obviously, by the Germans. And they were gone for 4 or 5 months at a time, sometimes a year. We had Major Sweat that came on the show. Like, he talked about that, how he was out and about in France for like 5 months just fucking some hot lady, which is pretty sweet, which you also deserve.
Well, a little armpit hair, if you ask me. I would never.
All right, let's move on to round number three.
First off, this round is about the law. Okay. So I have a couple questions for you. From the bar exam. Let's see if you fellas know, but don't look because the answers are there and I fucked up.
Yeah, that was weird.
Okay. Can Anne, a woman named Anne, can she be convicted of burglary if her defense is that she entered the building solely to seek refuge from a sudden storm? So you get home one day and I'm in your house rummaging around and I'm like, oh, chaps, It was raining out. That's why I'm in here.
It was raining.
I feel like there should be something like that, but it has to be a certain level of storm. Like, because it would make sense if you were, let's say you were in a remote area that didn't have any shelter or whatever, mm-hmm. and huge hailstorm came about and you had to get out of this. I don't think anybody convicts you of that.
Mm-mm. No, I think during that big snowstorm in Buffalo, people just were going into any house they could reach by the time the snow got too high. And they did. But the answer is no, right? You cannot be convicted of burglary if you enter a building solely to seek refuge from a storm.
Oh.
So if you are going to do a little crime, wait until the bad weather comes.
Do it during a hurricane.
The moral of that is, Jim legally allowed to keep the $1,000 he found in a wallet in a public park, even though the owner later posted flyers searching for it?
Did he see it? I think that, well, intent is part of a crime, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I think that there has to be a nefarious nature. And lest we forget, under the Constitution, finders keepers, losers weepers.
Gear adrift is a gift in my mind. But the only, if you found $1,000 on its own, I think you could keep it. But in a wallet, that's a little different because you know clearly.
Yeah, it has identification someone. Probably. Yeah.
What do we think?
I'm saying no, he can't keep it.
I'm going to say he's allowed to keep it.
Okay, scroll. No, Jim is not legally allowed to keep the money as it belongs to the owner of the wallet. So if you have $1,000, you're going to lose. Make sure it's in your wallet.
There was somebody that was in the Barstool adjacent world. I think it was Pete Blackburn's girlfriend, and her name is escaping me. Cons, you might know. But there was a time she went pretty viral online about, well, I guess where else would you go viral? But there was a situation, I think it was at Bank of America, mm-hmm. where she went to go check her bank account, and there was over $1 million in it. And she had no idea that where it came from. She did the little check, $1 million in there. And she contacted the bank and was like, hey, there's $1 million in my account. And they took everything back. I feel like if you show that level of honesty,
yes.
10%.
Yep. I agree.
10% should be, because otherwise it's not gone. Now, granted, with wiring money and all that, they'd figure it out that it was her. But still.
Still.
She was honest. I feel like at least bare minimum 50 grand.
Mm-hmm. Finder's fee. Yes.
Or a good stress ball or a cool bank pen or something.
Yeah.
Anyway. This
a lifetime supply of bank pens.
This is all about the bar exam. And I was asking you these questions, but guess what? They don't matter at all anymore.
They don't matter at all. And this is, we don't have to go through this whole article, but basically the sum of it is that in Washington state, they're trying to pass a law right now that has, you don't have to be past the bar in order to practice law there. Mm-hmm. That you could do essentially an apprenticeship and you have to take like a certain level of, eyes on, or I guess like in the courtroom, being with different attorneys at different times. And then after 6 months of doing that, you can start doing like some misdemeanor cases or whatever, like small type of law.
Their thing too was there's the bar exam. I mean, look, there's crazy, wacky, shitty lawyers everywhere. The bar exam doesn't stop the bad ones from getting in or the good, but it does stop good people from getting in, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know. If I walked into an attorney's office, though, and I said, oh, have you passed the bar? And they said no, but I've watched a lot of Law and Order. I don't know how comfortable I'd feel having that attorney represent me.
But now, if they had experience like actually going to the court and like, oh, but I shadowed this other attorney for a year and whatever, I'd be like,
Yeah, it's a thing in Texas, too. That's kind of what Kim Kardashian was trying to do in California as well. I think I would be okay with it. Now, if we're talking about a high level case, like if I was like on a murder charge or for example, I think I'm going to go with somebody that went to law school. But when in this article, there's been high level law professors that said that they don't have a problem with this, that a lot of times getting into law school, passing law school can be restrictive, and there's a lot of people who have the ability to do it without going to school. Like, Cons, you would definitely have Meghan Markle in suits, right? I would let her represent me in a second.
Maybe. I don't really like her, but no, the other dude in suits, whose name is escaping me, he was just like a genius or something.
That's not fair because he could memorize everything. And he did pass the bar multiple times, too.
Oh, yeah.
If you had to pick one Barstool personality to be your lawyer, you've been convicted of stealing $1,000 from someone's wallet. who here is going to be your defense?
I mean, I would go probably Portnoy would be one for sure.
Mike Portnoy?
His dad, yeah.
Mike Portnoy Esquire?
I'm saying Dave Portnoy. Dave, because he's one of the best arguers that there is. Like, that's he's true. A great arguer. And then second, Francis, just because he's smart as shit.
Smart, yeah.
Yeah. I might throw Large in that mix, too. I feel like he's pretty smart.
Yeah, he is.
Been around the block. Those three are good. I think that's a heck of a legal team. I mean, that's up there with OJ's legal team.
Jersey Jerry.
Yeah, I feel like he's a man who knows how to weasel his way around things.
What about you, Cons? Anybody different?
No, those three, I would seriously, I'd just put them all on a team together, and I think that would be unbelievable.
Now, I think having somebody in a trial, those are mine. But if I had to pick deposition, that they're leading a deposition, I'm going with Ryan Whitney. I'm going with Kirk Minahan and Dave Portnoy. Because you will walk out of that room, if you're not ready, so rattled.
I'd be crying.
I feel like it would be the military equivalent of going into like a promotion board with the Sergeant Major of the Army, the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, and then the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like that's who you feel like you're walking in there with.
Yeah, my goal is to never end up on that show for any reason, really.
I don't even want to be mentioned on that show.
Not at all.
Just act like I don't exist at all. Anyway, I thought it was fascinating that that's what's going on. And if it was able, I think somebody from Barstool should do it.
Yeah. We need a lawyer.
Yeah.
We probably do.
Spider would be good at it because Spider can do basically anything.
Yep.
He can. All right. Let's move on to some save rounds and alibis. Cons, we'll start with you.
I saw a video. You all know Miss America is a second lieutenant in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
She put a wreath on the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier the other day. Just Google it. Kate, add that to your list of things to Google. Maybe it was because she has like these really nice long fingers. The crispiest salute I've seen. And from an Air Force officer, no less. It was very impressive. Very crispy salute.
Yeah, because usually they do all kinds of weird shit. Like when I worked at Lackland, it used to drive me bananas because, you know, like you go all the way like just above your eye and then you cut down straight back down to below your hip with your fingers extended and joined and thumb along the hand. That's how you're supposed to salute. The Air Force folks, they put it up there and then drop it down straight in front like a windshield wiper. Mm-hmm. Hated it.
Did not know that. See, I'm learning a lot today.
Mm-hmm.
So please Google that, everybody. It was a very crispy salute. My question though is too, like, do you ever go back to serving at this point? Like, you're Miss America, you're a pilot. Where do you go from here? Because you have so many duties as Miss America, I think.
Probably piloting still.
Yeah, right.
Probably essentially like the Air Force version of the War Bond tour.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Probably
getting
more women to join, more women interested in flying.
That's true.
That shit would probably be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Crispy ass salute. You'll love to hear it.
That's all I got.
You don't want to talk about I don't think we talked about it on the last show. The West Point honor code thing.
I
said a lot on social and really the crux of it is this. I think people look for things to further their stance and anything that they can latch onto. They don't get past the headline. And that was the thing here. Like, our mission statement has changed a bunch over the years. And the whole duty on our country aspect of it wasn't even in the mission statement since 1998. So are you to believe that prior to 1998, we were all jacked up and we've only been good 98 to, you know, 24? It annoys me. And
for those who don't have context, they change it from duty on our country. That duty, they change it to D-O-O-D-Y.
Oh, yeah.
So it's duty on our country. Yeah. Duty balls country.
But that's the thing, too. It's still our motto. It's still duty on our country, still on our ring. It's still etched in stone and buildings all over campus. So that's not going anywhere. I don't know. It's just it's interesting to see who gets angry at it. And I follow some people online and not that you can't have an opinion and if you didn't go there, but some people are getting really up in arms and I want to be like in Mean Girls when he screams in the gym, she didn't even go here.
Right.
Like, but that's my point. They don't really care. It's just another little nugget they can attach to their
agenda. Like being mad online. Yeah. Being mad online is fun.
Using the troops as a pawn is really effective. Yeah. You gotta say. If I was running for office, I'd be shameless with my own.
I don't think so.
No, I'd be too much. I
don't think you'd even mention it.
No.
I think you'd just move
on. Too much paperwork to run for office. I'm not too much.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Anything else, Cons?
No, that's it.
Catherine?
Have I talked about
I don't know if you guys saw my tweet this morning. Dude, I finally like succumbed to my daughter's daycare. Like I got some sort of stomach bug. My wife and I both had it on our anniversary, no less.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Thank you. Yeah,
wait till you get that hand, foot, and mouth, buddy. It's coming for your ass and it sucks.
And I like to think like I'm a Tommy Tough guy. Like, oh, I don't get sick. Man, I was sick. I was sick all day today.
Always get it worse than the kids do. That's
what they say.
And so then your kid, even though they're sick, is running around like crazy.
I don't know how they judge that. How do they judge that? That your kid gets it that's not as bad? You can't ask
because
them.
My kid can still run around the house screaming, demanding snacks, even though he's got like 100 and whatever fever, while I'm like shitting and pissing and vomiting at the same time on the toilet. And he's like, I want to watch Blippi. I'm like,
hey, what? Kids are pretty annoying in that regard too. When you don't feel well and you still have to take care of them and like do everything for them, it's kind of selfish.
Like, it's very selfish.
Maybe figure these things out for yourself.
Yeah.
So,
Catherine,
sorry. Go ahead.
Ooh, let's see what's on the new. I do confirmed have severe osteoporosis.
Do they have a treatment plan for you yet?
They do. Finally, I went to an endocrinologist at the VA. The VA are the ones who solved the whole thing. And listened to me about the whole thing and confirmed whatever. But I got a DEXA bone scan and I have the bones of like an 80-year-old woman.
A what scan?
It's called a DEXA, a DEXA bone scan. Mm. And essentially my hips and my spine especially are like Swiss cheese. I'm at very high risk for fracture, which is why 8 of my spine pieces have fractured. And basically, yeah, so... He got me approved for a new drug that I'm going to get an injection once a month for the next year. And then I have to take maintenance drugs probably the rest of my life to keep it going. But it's supposed to regrow a bunch of my bones, hopefully.
All right.
Some other stuff.
I didn't even know you could regrow
bones. Regrow bones. Yeah.
And neither did I.
I guess it's like kind of like intense stuff. So he's like, you're done having kids, right? Because if you weren't like, it might fuck with your kids' bones and all this shit. And I got to stop. Whatever. And so, yeah, it's been... I'm just so relieved to have an answer finally and to have a little bit of hope that this could be the thing that helps.
Is it supposed to get better?
I don't know, but it's just still, it's so painful. And so it's just been really tough to take care of. My parents have been here for over a week now helping me care for the kids because I still can't. It's been like genuinely, I'm like disabled, like genuinely. It's difficult to walk too far. But I still went up in the skyscraper on
some of the things that you do and that I see you. I'm like, well, why?
Yeah, because I can take my toddler around if I have help. And thank God I did because he had his best tantrum yet at the very top of the John Hancock building this weekend on the 95th floor. He threw himself down on the ground and my brother was there to wrestle him in.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But really, we parked in a parking garage in the building. I took an elevator and then I didn't do the tilt thing. I stood and watched.
I see Kate's Instagram. I'm like,
yeah,
this double dog right here.
But honest to God, this is going to say, I'm like, I feel like I'm one sneeze away, one trip away, one, like I'm paranoid. I'm like, if a car hits me, but like every step I take, I can, this sounds nuts, but like,
I think if a car hit just about anybody, it wouldn't end up too well.
That's true. But I mean like a minor bump. Like I feel like an airbag. I feel like an airbag would kill me. Like I feel like just super fragile. And so it's nerve-wracking because I don't want to break anything else because it's just been terrible. So but I'm glad we have some answers. And the VA doctors like straight up have been fucking amazing. And I'm so grateful for that care. So yeah. Anyway, that was a long ramble, but finally figured it out. And it was that my son was drinking my bones. That's what happened. That's what it
really was.
It was a very rare form of osteoporosis.
Did it make you hate him?
Yes. Oh, he's gone. He's gave him away to some other family.
He's
so.
At put Paul,
him in
the, Chicago.
Put him in the woods and killed
he's
him.
He's at Paws. You can, yeah. So he's, still have spork, but got rid of those. Also, my son turned 3 today.
Oh,
hey, happy birthday. Yeah, okay. Yeah. He's the fucking best, man.
He is.
It's awesome. Yeah. So, anyway.
My kid loves Cash too.
I know. They're awesome with him.
Yeah. Huge buddies. I don't really have anything. It's been a slow week in my neck of the woods. I'm glad that Kate finally has some answers.
Yes.
Like the whole squad's been waiting for that for a while. So getting
so I can stop fucking talking about it. I'm so sorry. No. Anyone who asks me like how you doing, I'm like, don't ask me. I'm gonna tell you.
Oh, and I have fantastic news about Gussie Boy from Heaven Above.
Oh, what's the latest?
So a couple about 2 weeks ago, I was about to have like a breakdown because the vet called me and was like, there's not a whole lot we can do. It's getting to that point where you're gonna have to think about making some hard decisions. Mm. And I was like, God, man, I just love that dog so much. Like I've talked about Saika and what he did for me, so much on this show. Gus is my favorite dog ever.
Yeah.
Like he's perfect. And he was going through so much stuff where his skin was so irritated, like it looked slimy and raw, like a legit burn victim is how his neck looked. It was so bad.
It was skin infection.
Yeah,
right?
It was a bacterial skin infection. Oof. And he went on so many different rounds of antibiotics, so many different things. And finally, there was a vet, and she is a genius. Like she went in, scraped it a little bit, put it under a microscope and was like, this is the type of bacteria it is. This is the type of medication we need. This is what you're going to do. I did all followed her instruction. Gus is like back to when he was a puppy.
No way.
Like his skin feels soft. The best part, he was reeking like a hot pile of trash.
Chaps brought him to the office and I love Gus too. He's stinky. Got the most soulful eyes I've ever seen. That boy was a little stinky.
He was very stinky.
Stinky boy.
So now, and he was so stinky that when friends would come over, I have to put him away. And then I'd open up our bedroom door and it smelled like a fart box.
Yeah.
But now he's good. He can go out, be on a walk, see his buddies.
Thank God.
I'm so thrilled that Gussie Boy from Heaven Above is doing fantastic.
I love that.
Yep.
That's wonderful.
All right. We'll be back next week. Sound the retreat.